Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have a terrific panel. Our dear friends are all here gathered to talk about what is going on, and we look forward to hearing from all of you. Panel at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Big Joe. I'm ready.
Excellent. You are ready. We are all ready for radio magic. Aren't you, Rosemary Armeo, investigative reporter?
Ready for magic, yes.
Excellent. Mike Spain is with us this morning. He is the former associate editor of the Times Union newspaper in Albany, New York, or Colony to be exact. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And Libby Post is back. You had so much fun yesterday.
Back
today.
It's true. And today is election day, folks.
I have a question. What? Rosemary, your sister visited us yesterday, sat in the corner over here very quietly, didn't say anything. But we all wanted to know what she really thought of the roundtable.
Oh, she loved it. She's become a fan.
Really?
Now, did she say she lives in Virginia?
No, she lives in Ithaca.
Ithaca.
That's almost Virginia.
No, she said, well, I know because she said that she streamed it, that she didn't listen to it,
yeah,
so I knew that. Yeah,
it. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, it was very nice having her.
Yes.
I wonder if the
I have other sisters I can bring. My mother wants to come in and sit in. I don't know.
I open this to all of you, please. Whatever guest you want to bring in, please.
You should. Absolutely. Yeah.
Sure.
It would be fun.
I say, oh, come, you know, I've turned you all into like a spectacle. Come see my little friends in the booth. They'll amuse you.
The best part is your visitors get to hear what goes on when the mics are off.
Yeah, the pauses.
So can you tell me what she really thought of me?
She was very happy that you were here, Alan. We thought you might just be doing it remote.
I see.
It was a special thrill.
Yeah. Well,
and she thinks you should buy the new Prius.
Buy the new Prius.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very interesting question because it does have four-wheel drive, and I have to drive from Great Barrington to here in the snow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll figure that out, and we'll report back to you later. Let you know how things are going. As Libby mentioned, it is election day, so obviously we'll be watching that today very closely and see what happens. We also have many other things to talk about. We begin with the Trump tax return story. This is an interesting, I think it's going to be one of these days. Okay. The appeals court rejects the president's attempt to withhold tax returns from local prosecutors, setting stage for a Supreme Court fight. So the big question ultimately will be, what will the Supreme Court do? But in the meantime, a federal appeals court on Monday unanimously rejected President Trump's effort to block New York grand jury subpoenas for his tax record, setting up a possible Supreme Court showdown. New York prosecutors are seeking 8 years of Trump's tax returns from his accounting firm in their investigation of hush money payments made by Trump's then-attorney Michael Cohen before the 2016 election. Trump's attorneys have argued that as president, Trump is immune not only from prosecution but from investigations. But in the decision, a three-judge panel of the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals held that, quote, any presidential immunity from a state criminal process does not bar the enforcement of such subpoena. That from the Washington Post.
Now, Joe, they did indicate in the Washington Post who appointed these three judges, did they?
Yeah, they were Democratic appointees.
Uh-huh.
All three.
And
all
one
three.
Has an Asian name, too.
So oh, my God.
No doubt it's going
totally
to
suspect.
Become...
So now it comes to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Katzman Chin Droney.
So, a Jew.
Walked into a bar.
She's not even started there.
And an Irishman walk into a bar and say, should we or shouldn't we make the president, you know,
well, no,
live up to
the right
law?
Right.
The question now becomes whether or not the Supreme Court is owned by the man who appointed so many of them.
Well, just two.
What'd you say?
Two.
Well, two, and you had Roberts, the Republican.
Right.
So there really is a majority now on the court, I believe. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not, like the Nixon tapes, and I believe that was a unanimous decision that Nixon had to turn over the tapes.
Trump has four votes going
I
in
thought it
who
was,
could swing towards right. letting him hide
yes.
the taxes.
Yes.
And it truly is Roberts who was the swing vote.
Yes.
But do you notice there's a whole pattern in these the courts, the appeals courts, federal appeals courts on not just taxes, but all of the Trump play for power. And they're all trying to hold him to right to law. Every one of them. It's just a remarkable loss record for Trump. He is not winning with the idea that as president he's exempt from even indictment. Even the Department of Justice's idea that a sitting president can't be indicted has been called into question by this latest.
And it's going to make it more difficult for the Supreme Court to reverse all
That's
of those decisions.
Why it's important, yes.
I'm fascinated. I'm really fascinated by what's going to happen here, because are they bought and paid for, or are they able to say, okay, I'm here, I have a life appointment, and I'm going to do what's right. Got to be keeping some people up at night, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does. This was the case where a few weeks ago, when it was argued before these three judges, that the attorney for Trump was making that just
ridiculous,
preposterous argument that, you know, the president is immune from anything while he's in office. And then one of the judges asked, does that mean he could shoot a man on Fifth Avenue and be immune? And he said, yes, Your Honor, or to that effect. I mean, this is just outrageous. This is heading for a showdown in the Supreme Court. This moved pretty quickly. So I wish that the case would be expedited and go before the court and we know where we stand. That's really important for America to know, because if the Supreme Court does not rule that the president, you know, if it rules that the president is above the law, I don't know where we go from there. I mean, I think that could be the beginning.
Well, I know where we go. We go to fascism.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're right. It's the end of democracy.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what do you you're a seasoned journalist. You're wonderful, top editor at the Times Union. You know, you've been around for a long time. So, can we put you on the record as what you expect to have happen at the Supreme Court level?
Unfortunately, I think it would be 4-3. It wouldn't be that unanimous. It would be in favor of the release of the court records or the tax returns.
Clarence Thomas won't vote against the president?
No, I don't
that's,
think
so. That's sardonic. Him. Sorry, don't write letters. Go ahead.
Don't write letters.
But I think that Thomas will be the swing vote. I think he knows.
No, Roberts.
Roberts, I mean, not Thomas. Yeah. Yes, correct. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Judge Roberts, the chief judge, will be the swing vote. Yes. That's my prediction, unfortunately, be a split decision.
The vote I'm most interested in is Gorsuch, who is the strict, we just wrote a book on it, strict originalist, stick to the text. And there is no question that if he stayed with his philosophy, it would be a vote in favor of releasing the taxes.
Right.
So with,
I
have to make just to get into the weeds for a second, but maybe I'm asking this as a question to help flush it out of my mind. But this is not the only case regarding taxes going before that may end up to the Supreme Court, right? This is just the one that would go fastest, or are there others?
This case is brought by Cyrus Vance, the DA in Manhattan, and this has to do with whether there was violations of the state's campaign finance laws when women who claimed to have affairs with then candidate Trump were paid off with campaign money back in 2016. That would be a violation.
Yeah, but that's not
of state
the substance
law.
Of the
no,
case.
No, right, but in order, and they want to look at the accountant's records that was handling Trump's funds to find out where that money came from, and that would include tax records, and that's what they're trying to get their hands on.
Well, there is another case, though, where the Judiciary Committee,
Jerry Nadler's committee, and I think also your own congressman is on a committee that is...
Oh, Richie Neely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, Richie Neely has been suing from the very beginning to get the tax records.
So are those all separate cases, or will they, or could they possibly be mushed together?
They could be.
Mush
You're
is
right.
a technical term.
Yeah, the congressional ones might be mushed together, and this one might be separate. Who knows? Yeah.
We shall see.
Mush is a legal term, of course.
Yeah,
yes. Well, I mean, so...
the Supreme Court can do whatever it wants.
So my question then is...
But the timing, that's the big question.
When well, will right. Yeah. Will it be when, before when, after
will
the
Will this
election?
Before or after the impeachment?
That's right.
Well, that's true, too. Right. So does anybody think that, does anybody in this room believe that we will see the president's taxes prior to Election Day 2020?
If I had a bet today, I'd say yes.
Really?
Me too.
Yeah. And I'll bet it won't matter that
close.
Much.
Well, that's another great point, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, if it shows that his income isn't that high, it doesn't really measure what his assets are and his claim that he's worth $8 billion or $10 billion or something.
It might show that he's a lying
right,
liar.
Right, that's what it
but we know that already.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, his base already figures he uses hyperbole and they're ready to forgive that. They like the results of what he's done.
Right.
But, why then such an effort to keep them shielded?
Well, you know, you could really have fun with this one, right? I mean, for example, we know that this guy is a master of diversion.
That's right.
What if this was just all diversion?
Right. And then they come out and they're not that damning. They're not going to list the names of the oligarchs from Russia who've lent him money through laundering or anything like
which had
been alleged.
Or who haven't.
Right. But I think the other thing here is that it doesn't really matter. I mean, it does matter what's in it, but the media will just continue to focus on it over and over
But what if it's
again?
Like the Mueller report and it's a big dud as far as having a smoking gun?
I think it's
Mueller
not going to be
a big dud.
I don't think it's going to be a big dud.
Well, I don't think Mueller was a big... Well, Mueller might have been a big dud when he testified before Congress in July, but the report... If you go back to the report and you look at the report, it has some incredibly scary, damning documentation of Russian interference in the 2016
election. We're seeing that
election.
Now that the memos, the FBI memos connected to it have come out. We're seeing it. I think that this is part of a Trump philosophy on dealing with problems, though. So he just stonewalls. He doesn't. Mm-hmm. He may not even know himself what it would show. In fact, he's an idiot. He probably doesn't. But he's just, it's the point that, no, I don't want to give him and I'm not going to. And I think he would just stick with that forever. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think it also goes to the big hands comment. You know, I think it'll show that he's not as big of a millionaire, billionaire as he says he is.
Well, it may
is,
not indicate that, though.
Huh?
You know, I mean, it's not going to list all your assets. The income tax forms don't do that, you know.
But he keeps saying that he's this, you know, brilliant businessman. It could show that he's, like, got a dollar in the bank. Who knows?
Yeah.
Look, we are going to find out important stuff from these documents. He's already lost his charity because of tax returns that showed his fake
foundation.
Really, really horrible dealings with it. They were just illegal. And there's probably campaign contribution stuff in there that's illegal, too. That's what Cohen got caught on. So it's not insignificant to see what's in there.
Do you think we'll ever see him go to jail, Rosemary?
No, absolutely not. We don't like our politicians to go to jail. So that's why his whole locker-up about Hillary was so appalling. We do not lock up opposition politicians. So, even Richard Nixon. No, I don't.
Yeah.
Disgrace, but an exile, but not...
I agree with you.
Not jail.
I agree with you.
Even I don't want to see him go to jail. Yeah. I'd like to see Donnie, that little jerk, go to jail, but not... but not
Donald Jr., you mean.
Yeah, right. Donnie the baby. He's got a new book out. Did you see that? The president's touting it on his presidential tweet, which is also an emoluments clause violation. But who's counting?
Right.
Yeah, that's just a fake constitutional clause, I believe.
That's phony.
Not real. It wasn't in there at the beginning. So
I want to get to just one other part about this, and then we'll move on, which is, the past six presidents, dating back to Carter, have all voluntarily released their tax returns. What can be done, or do you think anything can be done, to ensure that all presidential candidates/presidents have to release their taxes?
Well, you change the law. Yeah, now, yesterday I got into terrible trouble with at least one listener who said she, I believe, was ashamed of me because somebody had used the word normative.
Oh, yes.
Oh, and you asked
Sarah asked about normative.
Yeah, normative. Yeah. And I said, okay, just for a
you
whole
said,
audience.
I'll bite.
What? Well, can
explain
you
normative.
Normative to everybody. So what you're saying, Joe, here is is that there's a difference between normative, what every president has done and should do, as opposed to legal, which is what every president has to do in order to run for office. One is normative and one is statutory.
I've already said this, that I hope someone is keeping track of every normative, every standard that we have had that he has violated so that it can be codified, whether it's at the federal level, difficult to do because we usually have divided houses, or at the state level, as New York and California have done. They tried to make laws saying, if you want to run in our state for an office, we want to see your taxes.
You know what's very interesting, Rosemary, is that things do change if political control changes.
Right.
So in the New York State Senate, for example, we see all kinds of things happening, like early voting and other things that might not have happened if the Republicans were still in control.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's going to be a lot riding on this, the United States Senate election, although Trump will certainly have the veto power over anything that both houses do.
It's true, but there should be, there I go again. At some point in the future, it would be very nice to see whether it has to roll out slowly or done in one fell swoop, as we saw the reforms after Watergate, where you're going to take care of what is the, and how does congressional oversight work? If you scorn a subpoena or a call from Congress, what happens to you? Can Capitol Police arrest you? All the questions that we have been asked that we never thought we'd have to answer, of course you're going to answer the subpoena. And now those are all being violated. That needs to be codified. And I do believe that Pelosi, if nobody else, is keeping track of this. You're going to see some of these roll out soon.
Sounds right to me.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Panel at WAMC.org for you to be included. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Libby Post. And we're having quite a bit of fun today. And we hope that as we discuss these very important issues of the day, you're enjoying it as well. Alan has letters. We'll go to those and we'll move on to some other stuff.
The always interesting Jamie writes us a letter who says, the problem for Trump is that he operates like a made-for-TV gypsy family. I don't think we're supposed to use the word gypsy anymore. I think that's
Roma.
Roma. Every line in the Trump tax returns will only be direct, the press and the prosecution to another scam, no more intelligent than not paying anyone for anything. His faithful may falter when they find out it was them he robbed most often. And you're wrong about jail. He has a date with a stainless steel toilet. We most likely have not even learned the reason why he will go down.
All right.
Thank you for that, gang. Dear panel, I voted this morning. The poll watcher wanted my ballot to be inserted into the machine face down. The machine counted my vote. Was it really counted? Will the scanner work face down?
The answer, to my knowledge, and assuming this is New York State, is that yes, and they are to be put in that way, at least to my polling place. The more important part is that if it's not put in correctly, and I've seen this with my own eyes, if it's not put in correctly, it will spit it out.
That's correct. I asked about putting it, when I was voting, I asked whether it should go face down or face up, and they told me very deliberately face down as part of the protection of confidentiality if someone was standing nearby.
Interesting.
And they will often put it in a, and I don't know if you do this,
folder.
They put a folder, then you guide it in. Also, you can ask for, it's a sort of a receipt, right, that tells you that your vote is counted and that it was proper. And so. Yeah. But obviously, if you ever have a question, just ask the poll watchers there, and they will.
Well, the election inspectors.
The
poll
election
watchers
inspectors
are the people who are tracking who's
correct
coming to
the election poll inspectors.
Workers. Yeah,
yeah, right, the yeah election inspectors, the ones who are running the crockpots.
Right. That's
okay.
Right.
Running the
crockpots.
Yes, and selling donuts. And things.
They always have. They have always have the when you walk in, there's always the crockpots going in. Maybe your election
in Massachusetts,
your polling spot is different than mine. But
right,
yes, there's always
what are in the crockpots and
always like some stew. And
wow,
goulash, that kind of thing. Yeah,
wow,
it always smells great.
Wow, isn't that interesting?
With the new voting in advance, you don't have to go to your local polling place. You can start popping around, see who has the best, baked
the best
goods. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's only for early voting, though.
Right. I understand.
Pete writes to a Supreme Court decision. Good morning. I think there will be a decision against Trump. .. But .. He won't have to release the tax returns till after he leaves office. A compromise. .. And that's Pete from Poughkeepsie. There's all kinds of interesting stuff going down in Poughkeepsie.
That's a good point. It does not mean when the court rules in favor of New York State and New York City's DA that those records are just released public. They will be released to the grand jury. But if the grand jury then uses some of it in making an indictment, then that information would become public. And there's always the possibility of it leaking out.
That was great, Mike. You know, I really did have a question about that.
Yeah. No, so I think a couple of your writers are pointing that out. So yeah. we learn a lot from the letters we get.
Sometimes. Okay. Sometimes. And then Ricky says, panel, ? Does that mean... panel? ? What does it mean? Hi, panel. If Republicans believe that presidents are untouchable, why did they try to impeach Clinton?
Oh, because they think Republican presidents are untouchable. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hypocrisy, not unknown.
Don't forget that impeachment is a political process.
Mm-hmm. Kathy says, subject, taxes. Morning, I think that Trump doesn't want his base to see that he doesn't pay taxes, maybe even cheats. And that's from Kathy with a C.
Well, all he's right. Boasted about it, too. That as a smart man, he doesn't pay taxes.
He doesn't.
There's nothing
to.
Illegal about it. So I'm not sure that that's true. I think he could spin that if it.
Do you recall back in like 1972, Nixon gave his papers, presidential papers and vice presidential papers, to a college or university, and then ended up writing it all off as
tax deduction.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it came out because he chose to make his documents public, that he paid no taxes that year. And Dan Rather confronted him on that and said, do you think that's fair? And he just kind of was awkwardly, you know.
Yeah.
That's a bit of imitation.
Yeah.
Okay, and then...
He put an enormous value on his papers.
Right. He had them
like
worth
$500,000
or a million. Back then, you know, that was real money.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And John said, Trump taxes. The case of Trump's taxes... that will be appealed to the Supreme Court will not necessarily allow us to see Trump's taxes. Your point, Mike. That's exactly what you were saying. That is a separate matter. This is a decision that will allow the tax forms to be shown to a grand jury. Also, point made by Mike. That is entirely different from the public seeing those tax forms. That is highly unlikely to happen, and that's John from Valley Falls.
All right, those are your letters, and we'll welcome more in a moment. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org, and we will get to those. Panel@WAMC.org. Moving on to other things, we go to this story, which is about the transcripts that have come out in regards to the hearings. The Ukraine envoy, fearing loss of job, told to tweet support for Donald Trump, according to, and then a White House lawyer defied subpoenas yesterday. So a lot going on in the impeachment inquiry. House investigators on Monday released the first transcripts from closed-door depositions taken as part of the impeachment inquiry as four White House officials, including John Eisenberg, a lawyer central to the Ukraine controversy, defied subpoenas to testify. The refusals to cooperate are coming on a day in which Trump tweeted that he sees no reason for lawmakers to summon witnesses regarding his July call with the Ukrainian president, which he again contended was
perfect.
Mm-hmm. The refusals to cooperate are coming on a day. House Democrats are encountering renewed stonewalling from the White House as they attempt to move deeper into the ranks of officials with knowledge of Trump's efforts to press Ukraine to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter at a time when U.S. military aid was being withheld from that country. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff said that open hearings would begin soon, though he provided no timetable. He spoke to reporters shortly after the release of transcripts from Marie Yovanovitch, the former ambassador to Ukraine, Michael McKinley, a former senior advisor to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Those transcripts show that at least in his meeting with in his phone call with Zelensky, that in the follow-up to that, the ambassador was told not to basically be very – to try to win the president's approval and to tweet very nice things about the president, which would get her off the S list and make things better, maybe, right?
Well, but, he had called her bad news on that call with Zelensky, so she had to try to – You know, it indicated obvious. That was after she already been called back. So, but I mean, it showed that Trump had a low regard for her, and she evidently chose not to tweet in his favor.
So there's something about all of this that is really puzzling me. And that is that they are now after the whistleblower full time, right?
Yep.
I mean, you know, that's a big thing. And apparently they know who the whistleblower is.
They must, yeah.
Yeah, they know who the whistleblower is.
The Congress knows.
I wish someone would ask Trump, do you know
who the whistleblower is? And he may or may not be truthful, but he does. I'm sure he does.
They know. And so now they're going to try to smear this as a Democratic operative or whatever. However, everything that the whistleblower has said turns out to be true. We now know that. We know it from all of the testimony and all the people who were on the phone call and all the rest of it. So my question is, what's going on other than the obvious diversion? Because they have nothing else to work with. They get on the guy's case and they or the woman's case and they scream about it, hoping that that will go to the 40% and to the people that need to hear it in order to stay online. But I still think they're floundering here.
Well, they're attacking the process, not attacking the facts that have come out. They're not even addressing those. They're just saying it's unfair, it's biased, it's partisan, the rules are bad, they're doing this in secret, and then they bring it out and it's not in secret, and they attack that. It's a whole thing. At the same time, though, there's another tactic that's going on and says, okay, so what? I did it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's acknowledgement that he's done it. And you know, you're going to impeach me for that? Now they're beginning, some Republicans are beginning to say, that might have been inappropriate. But
it wasn't impeachable.
Mike,
even the president is tweeting and saying, I didn't do it. But even if I did do it,
nothing was wrong with it.
There's nothing.
It was perfect.
There is nothing wrong with it.
Well, it was a perfect
Except
call.
I think the U.S. Constitution is pretty plain on this stuff.
Well, let's get back to the ambassador started this line on. She was in fear of her life. She was told, get on a plane. There's a threat. Right. And Trump was threatening her. And she was told, suck up to the guy if you want to get out of trouble. I think that we are seeing in the release of this first transcript some of the small details that could actually change minds of the public, if not his stalwarts in Congress, where these are like, this is disgusting. That's intimidating an employee.
And the 40% will be have their minds changed, you think?
No, but maybe 5%
of that 40%.
Maybe the independents, or the Democrats who waver about whether to go and vote or not.
It's the independents that this will have an impact on.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what struck me. What a horrible way this woman was treated.
The fear, because they were told her to get on a plane immediately.
Get on the plane right away.
She indicated that she was concerned that there was some sort of threat.
A security threat,
which is not uncommon in that, and they would not clarify and get on the first plane and get out of there.
And he, Trump himself issued words in the phone call that were threatening something, she's going to deal with some bad things, right? Wasn't it with something vague like that? His bullying tactics are coming out in the details of these transcripts, which are fascinating.
Well, what you're describing is some, a policy operative, operation that makes a lot of people sick. But is it illegal to call back a ambassador to a foreign country that you don't like or don't agree with? The president should maybe the president ought not interfere with the State Department at such a micro level, but But I guess that's not against the law.
Well, the second point I was going to make is that, to me, Pompeo ends up looking the worst of all in this.
Oh, he's
not, of course, subject at this point to impeachment at all, but he looks terrible in this. He said, no, I never heard that there were any concerns about how she was being treated. And then you've got a transcript from his own assistant who quit in protest and said, I brought it up three times with him, McKinley, mm-hmm. right. So that's the sort of things coming out in the transcript. They're not maybe central to whether or not he'll be impeached, whether there'll be support
right.
for it, but it's so damning
right.
about the way the whole place operates.
Well, remembering that the public support of impeachment is gradually ratcheting up.
It's higher
and this
now.
This will raise it higher.
It's higher now than it was for Nixon.
At this point.
And
right.
way higher than Clinton. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Way, yes, higher, than way Clinton, higher than which Clinton, which never was higher than, I think, 30%, 30-something
right.
percent.
Yeah. We're going to go to a break, but on his way to Kentucky for, I believe, his fifth post-impeachment probe rally, he was asked about this. He said, I really don't know her, but if you look at the transcripts, the president of Ukraine was not a fan of hers. Either. I mean, he did not exactly say glowing things. I'm sure she's a very fine woman. I just don't know much about her. But you have to take a look at the transcript because the president of Ukraine was not favorably inclined.
That's not
according
true
to
all.
The transcript of her testimony. Ivanovich thought she was on good terms with Zelensky until she read the summary of the July 25th call when Zelensky told Trump, it was great that you were the first one who told me that she was a bad ambassador because I agree with you 100%. With that, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Libby Post are all here, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Hey, want to talk about the defamation suit?
Sure.
Yeah.
I find the story to be fascinating. E. Jean Carroll, a longtime writer and women's advice columnist, on Monday sued President Trump, accusing him of defaming her this summer after she claimed he sexually assaulted her more than two decades ago in an upscale New York City department store. E. Jean Carroll publicly described the alleged assault for the first time in June in a published excerpt of her memoir. At that time, and in a new lawsuit, she said that after running into the then real estate developer at Bergdorf Goodman in late 1995 or early 1996, they chatted, they shopped together before he attacked her in a dressing room. She said he knocked her head against a wall, pulled down her tights, and briefly penetrated her before she pushed him off and ran out.
Charming.
Carol is seeking unspecified compensatory and punitive damages. I'm filing this on behalf of every woman who has ever been harassed, assaulted, silenced, or spoken up only to be ashamed, fired, ridiculed, and belittled, Carol said in a statement. No person in this country should be above the law, including the president of the United States. Trump has denied ever meeting her and has said that she was trying to promote her book. White House Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham on Monday called the lawsuit frivolous and Carol a fraud.
Well, she can't sue about something that happened in 1995. Now she's suing about those comments that the president has made, calling her a liar, and these comments from his own spokesperson, Stephanie Grisham, they're just brutal. I mean, she goes on and on about how it's unbelievable, and that's defaming if Carol's accusations are true.
The issue is this. Why would she come forward and even talk about this? Just like the woman who came forward about Brett Kavanaugh, knowing that they were going to get lambasted in the press by the Trumpers, by the folks who, you know, who don't believe women. Why would she come forward if this wasn't true? Why put yourself through something like this?
Because she wrote a book and wants to sell it.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
No, but Rosemary gives you what their explanation.
Right, that's their explanation. Yeah, that's
right. It's an alternative version that his
base
can grab.
And the 40% will believe it.
And let's face it.
And it's a brilliant argument, Libby, as a woman I know this, because, I couldn't do it. I was afraid. I didn't want to be exposed. So you write a book about it. And it's right there. It's a very difficult argument to beat.
I
Now, meanwhile, the president, I'll let you hammer that one out, but in the meanwhile, the president earlier said that she was lying and, most importantly, not his type.
Well, right.
And that she was 75.
I would get just on that. That was 30 years ago.
She was 45. Let's do the math.
Yeah, but he would have been his age.
Right. Right, right. I know. But why would Christine Blasey Ford come forward? Why would this woman come forward after all of this time? Because they see the injustice of what's going on. They saw the NBC, the Access Hollywood tape, just like everybody else did. They recognize. I mean, and she's not the only one. This woman is not the only one to come forward and say this man has abused them. And he hates women. He is a misogynist. He sees women... For one thing and one thing only, and when they said to the ambassador, you need to suck up to him, I can't imagine there wasn't a sexual innuendo there as well. I'm sorry.
Okay, I think that's overboard. I think you meant suck up in the flatter thing that gets to. But here I am. I'll get all the letters from the feminists again. But we women, in many ways, we women have put ourselves into this because we have been invited this protectionist and we've been exploited because we want to keep silent about it. And it's shameful that we were raped, like we brought it on. She should have been yelling about this and the other 20 women who have come forward on Trump as soon as it happened, not when he's in the public spotlight, not when it does look like it's just to get him. We have invited that. And I understand all the reasons why, and I'm glad for the Me Too movement because now women will start to do that. I don't think going forward we're going to have these problems. But part of it has been us, our own fear, our own cravenness. We have got to stand up.
It could have destroyed her career as an editor for a magazine
if she had
publicly accused the billionaire Playboy Donald Trump in 1995 of raping her in a department store.
But accusing the president now in 2019 won't? It doesn't have the same thing?
Will you acknowledge that maybe over the past 30 years events will happen that will help her come to grips with it and want to and be willing to go public with it now when there's less risk in the sense of her career and maybe more compelling reasons might be that somebody has to speak the truth because this is what happened and he's...
We just have to stop blaming the victim here and that's what's going on.
No,
yes,
it is not.
Yes, it is.
I am
I'm sorry, Rosemary. The reality of women's lives, whether it's today or yesterday or 30 years ago, is that it's incredibly difficult to bring up charges of sexual assault. Part of it is because nobody was there except the two people, unless it happened in a gang rape situation. Okay? And so it's very, very difficult for women to talk about it and bring it forward. And it has to do with, the patriarchy has screwed us. Absolutely. Yep. The patriarchy has told us, shut up, sit down, lie back, think of England. It wasn't that bad. And that is ingrained in us from the time we're little girls. So we can't say this is the women's fault. This is the patriarchy's socialization of women. And we need to support and understand why women do and why women don't report.
I mean,
but we can't blame them for not reporting.
None of that I disagree with. None of that contradicts what I'm saying, which is that women need to in the past, and I'm so glad they finally are now stick together and support each other. But I do understand how effective a method it was that men used. The patriarchy won because they used our own fears.
Absolutely.
And we need more brave women. I mean, look at Bill Cosby. That took four decades.
Right. And the same thing is the same here.
Every woman who he hurt after the first one, the other women, those earlier women, are partly to blame. We have to speak up to protect other women.
I don't think they're partly to blame.
I don't think they should be seen as blamed.
I mean, I think it can, but because you have to understand, I mean, obviously there should be an understanding of their plight, of what they were going through. And all of these stories, so many of these stories match each other that there's something to it. And as you admitted, there is a reason why they're not coming forward.
They're afraid.
But I think the Cosby example is an excellent one. It took some women to be brave that encouraged others to step forward. That's the whole Me Too movement.
And could I point out that the Cosby show is still being played on television all over the place?
Well,
Well,
is
so
it?
Much for the. Oh yeah.
Last I heard, Trump was still in the White House.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there you go.
But we have to recognize how difficult it is for women to come forward.
I simply, the one thing about this that I hate is that yes, I blame men. It is their fault, but we have some responsibilities too. And I don't like. Oh, we can run around, you know. And do anything we want, and men have to only be the ones who have control. No, it doesn't work that way either.
No means no. Period. End of story. I don't care. I don't care if a woman walks into a bar.
Okay, but if you're saying that with your shirt off and you've kissed the guy first, it's not the same.
No, it is the same. No. It is exactly the same. No means no.
Okay.
Period. End of story. That's it. Because when no longer means no, then rape happens. And that's what happens.
Well, I think you're going to have a hard time, and you see it, getting juries to agree with that. And as I'm a feminist,
that's
and
not
I can't see that ever happening to me. But yes, I don't agree with it. I think women have responsibility in this too.
All right. We are going to hold it there and
yikes.
And look for the letters.
Yeah, yikes.
Right. Wait, just wait.
Speak for yourself. I'm going to look for the exits.
But just before you go, did you hear about in Florida there was a city council that said no to $1,700 in funding for the library to get a digital subscription to the New York Times because they all agreed, the entire city council agreed, the New York Times is fake news.
Oh,
and they wouldn't
God.
Give the library the money.
I bet they have it by the end of the day.
I bet they do, but geez,
wow.
It's really chilling.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back right after this. That's you know, interesting, right. We started off the show this morning. I was wondering because I was having trouble getting Wi-Fi, and what I've learned in the last 3 minutes is that it works now because we have a lot of letters from after you two going off.
Yeah, we do have a lot of letters.
All right, yeah. So let's go to them. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Libby Post. Libby and... Rosemary, we're in a spirited conversation a moment ago. We have letters about that. We go to them now.
We have a lot of letters, and some of them are not about that.
Oh, okay.
Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, Jeff, is talking
Jeffrey.
About Trump taxes. Watching MSNBC last night, the decision was written so narrowly, saying that turning over his taxes would not interfere with Trump fulfilling his duties. His accountants only need to turn them over. The president does not need to do anything. Because the decision was written so narrowly, there'll be no room for challenge and no reason for the Supreme Court to take it up. Want to bet? That's me.
That's a really interesting analysis. They may be right.
But they are holding off on, and you know, even the Cyrus Vance is not pushing to have it released so they can decide whether to appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, also, you know, there is this matter of certiorari, otherwise known as cert, and the Supreme Court can say no. We don't want to touch this. We'll leave it with them.
They could very well do that and not have to put their fingerprints on it.
Right, and uphold the lower court ruling, essentially.
Very interesting.
That would be, I think they might do that because it's going to be very difficult for them to reverse every single ruling.
Okay, the answer is no.
No what? They're going to do it?
No, and here's the question, which we will get in the we'll get in the mail. Can Trump fire anybody appointed to the Supreme Court?
No.
No.
We cannot. Okay. Oliver writes, hello, panel. If an elected president shoots someone on Fifth Avenue without cause, should they not go to jail? If one wants to commit crimes and suffer no consequences, should one become a politician? Similar questions might be asked about those who hold badges. Are we to be a nation of unequal application of the law? And that's from Oliver. Good letter.
We always have been, unfortunately.
Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
We already know that Donald lost $1 billion over a 10-year period, an average of $275,000 each day. What might the new tax returns show? More importantly, where is all that cash coming from? Many thanks, and that's Jim in Binghamton. Great to hear from you, Jim in Binghamton. Let's see. Elias says, taxes. Tax returns will show what Trump has been desperately trying to hide, the fact that he is a business failure. Forbes magazine researched Trump's wealth. They determined that if he simply placed his inheritance in an index fund, he would be worth over $10 billion. Best estimates show his massive debt brings his wealth to well under $1
billion. Okay.
Okay, here we go. And Ron says, your priorities today, Joe and Alan. Listening this morning, I am disappointed that you, like so many of the USA news media, chose to lead with a discussion of Trump's tax return. It is a diversion. The big news in capital letters today is the announcement of withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accords. It is of greatest importance to everyone everywhere and another piece of evidence demonstrating that the United States has become a leading example of what FDR called an outlaw nation. Add to this abrogation of missile defense and INF treaties and from nuclear arms limited treaties, refusal to become a member of the International Criminal Court, and other significant rejections of the international rule of law, and you may have the best reason to fear Trump and throw him and his Senate enablers out of office next year. And that's Ron from your next door neighbor in Greenwich.
The reason it isn't as big a story as you portrayed is that he announced a year ago he was going to do it. And today, or yesterday rather, was just the start of a process that will take more than a year to put into place to formally withdraw. And so if people get out to vote, who should vote in 2020, this could be stopped. We don't necessarily have to leave.
Well, I have to say that I did cover this in my morning utterances this morning.
I think
it's a huge, huge deal because as I said this morning, we throw a kid into jail for walking into a store with a revolver, for years. Mm-hmm. And here's a guy who is literally going to be responsible for killing a lot of people by this attitude. It's just awful.
I think this is where citizens really do have to step up because government is not going to act. A Trump government is not going to act. But there's still plenty that we can
do. Well, cities and corporations can participate themselves in the Paris Accord. Many have indicated that they absolutely intend to. The problem is, according to the story today, it's not an easy thing, even though the withdrawal of the U.S. wouldn't kick in until January 21st, 2021. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, the new president, when he's sworn in, if a Democrat wins or Trump is not running and another president is in place that day, could say, stop our withdrawal. But it's already like 90% there by that point, and it could be different terms in order to get back in that might make it complicated.
Yeah. On the other hand, a new president, if it's a Democratic president, is likely as to try to correct this mess as well as so many others.
And the other thing is that the U.S. is such an important player that the terms are going to be whatever the United States wants to get back in. Yeah.
And Sarah says, missing the point. I really think the Democrats are completely missing the point in the fact that all we need to do is to fight marketing with marketing. Trump and his organization are just masters at marketing and using 3-4-word slogans to get people energized. And 17 candidates and no slogan is going to cost us the election.
That is so
true. We need
something
powerful that average people who have small attention span can sink their teeth into. I don't know what it is I wish I was smart enough to know.
It's what I was talking about yesterday. It's about values and emotions. And that's what the Make America Great Again is, a value statement that plays to people's emotions. And the Democrats have to do the same.
And we heard from Janos in Great Barrington. Dear panel, instead of venting your frustration about Trump every morning since he got elected, why don't you focus in depth in capital letters on informing your listeners of each of the remaining Democratic candidates and what they have to offer as their platform, discuss the pros and cons, have commentary by specialists in the field, talk about what our country needs moving forward, et cetera, so that the public can make an informed decision when voting in 2020. And then we heard from Jim.
Okay, I think that's your job, though.
His job.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, never mind. Never mind. I was thinking of something Mario Cuomo once said about a barn. Okay, so
a barn.
Anybody can.
Yeah, yeah, anybody can kick down
a barn.
Jim said, "Is lying an infectious disease?" Before the arrival of Trump, it was rare to find a politician who didn't feel ashamed when caught lying.
Yeah.
Today, discovered lies are assaulted with claims of fake news. Is it possible that Putin put something in the water Republicans are drinking?
They're all Manchurian candidates.
And then we heard from Frank. Why can't everyone in America see that Trump and his administration are running the government like gangster thugs, threatening, bullying, bribing, and so on? It's disgusting. We have a crime family living in the White House. This is why Trump is so hell-bent on hiding his tax returns. Taxes is what got Al Capone in jail. Trump's fate should be the same. And that's from Frank. And then from Dan, voter machine hacking and fraud. It does not reassure me at all that you can ask for a receipt to prove that you voted. A machine could easily print phony receipts. It would be impossible to count paper receipts and compare them to the machine totals. Also, the machine could be rigged to change votes. Receipts do not protect against that. I think the danger with electronic voting is much greater than people realize. And then we heard from Rachel, who said, Rosemary's blaming is gross, and I am offended that you would give that misogyny any oxygen. Thank you, Libby, for calling Rosemary out, because of what Rosemary is saying is disgusting. And then finally, Rosemary from Teresa.
Oh, is that Mom? Mom.
No.
There's other Teresas.
Is there another Teresa?
Subject, Lazy Ford. Rosemary, look at what happened to her, and it's still happening after she came forward, even at the point in time, much less than would have happened 30 years ago, and sent from my iPhone.
All right.
Okay, that's important.
Very good. Thank you very much. So
but it is interesting. It is interesting that out of all of those letters, you know, just a few, had to do with the debate between Libby and
Well, I think there are many.
We haven't gotten to them.
They haven't been brought to us.
Well, thanks for calling that to my attention.
And they're all over the place, too.
Yes, they are. They are. We're watching in real time here.
Split decision.
It's, you know, 60, and I don't want to be pitted
really?
Against. I don't want to be pitted against Libby because everything she says is valid. But this is an important discussion, and women have to be part of it. And it's not like pick the girl's side or pick the boy's side. That's just not the way it works. It's about moral education. It's about equality. Lots of values are involved. I do not come to this. It's not like I'm blaming victims or Libby is.
So I'm just going to read.
Only champion.
I'm going to read three from each side, if that's okay. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I'm only guessing the side by the subject line. So, but I'm assuming if somebody says, as usual, Rosemary is right.
Oh, read that one.
And then there's one that says, I really love what Libby has
to say. Yeah, yeah. We'll get to all. Three and three. Okay. Sorry, Libby, if you had sons, you'd feel differently. In this day when
I do have sons.
Of these kids
one.
Had 50 shades of gray and worse. They think no is just more exciting men and women. I've seen great young men purposely victimized by women. I've told my boys that even if she's coming at you naked saying, take me now, say no, because if she's been drinking, she cannot consent.
Good.
Rosemary needs education. Longtime listener, first time writing in. Rosemary needs to speak with a sex educator as soon as possible. Her ideas around sex and women are not just outdated. They are dangerous. A sex educator will be able to teach her about the current thinking around consent and sex, which is contributing to a huge paradigm shift toward safer, healthier sexual situations for women and men. Alan, you have the printed letters. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you could, if you like, Joe, continue. You were going to do three and three?
I'm sure there will be duplicates.
Scott says trauma. When people experience a traumatic event, one of the major coping strategies is to try to bury it deep in our psyche and try our best to resume a, quote, normal life. That's why women usually don't report. No means no, sincerely. Signs it, father of five daughters, four granddaughters, brother to one sister. And then we heard from Jody, who says, Trump's contempt for the environment. Dear panel, it has been reported that President Trump wants our national parks to modernize, in quotes, by allowing food trucks and Amazon deliveries. How is it that Trump can unilaterally make such decisions without Congress having any, capital any, say whatever? He can decide to pull out of the climate agreement without consulting any other branch of government. It's frightening. No, it's terrifying to think about what else the corrupt president will come up with next year. Now, I hope that you didn't read this one from Amy. No means no?
No.
Okay. Libby is correct, and this is where the line is drawn. That a woman is in control of her body, her destiny, and her safety on the street, in a bar, and in the bedroom. Libby points to a zero-tolerance line in the sand, that a woman consents at the beginning, the middle, and the end of sex. She is willing or unwilling partner all the way through. At whatever time, she can decide where there is a yes and where she decides no, in capital letters. Shy of this, she is an unwilling victim, and many in our society are conditioned to not understand or see it.
Not that I'm counting or anything, but that 3 and 3 thing has gone by the...
No, we stopped it because I was doing it. I was picking 3 out of the thing, yeah, and then we have a printed letters that came
not
in.
Not that you're counting.
That are curated.
Not that I'm
by,
counting, right. That it's all Libby.
Okay,
right.
Go ahead.
Well, let me just say to the woman who said she had 3 boys, I have a son. And one of the things that I'm most proud of is the fact that he does respect women. And that, you know, when he came into my life when he was 9 going on 10, which is a formative age, we talked about these issues. And I was made it really clear that no means no and you always have to ask. And you don't talk about it with your friends in the locker room. And those were his, that became his mantra. That became his way of dealing with women. So if you talk to boys, and boys 9, 10, 11 years old, early enough, they can be educated and they can take this on as their own ethos. I do think it's possible. It's
okay,
about educating.
That's fine. And I have 3 sons, and they would be punished for littering and for being disrespectful to girls. So they also had that same education. I'm talking about what we tell, like, my granddaughter and our sisters,
and you
which
tell,
is you stand together, Libby. And you stand together when someone is attacked. You stand up for them, and you speak out. You don't hide it. It's not, if you are attacked, that's not shameful. Newspapers won't use their names because that's respectful of women. No, I'm saying it is not. So that's the whole thing. Women have to fight back. What's happening now? I wish it happened 40 years ago.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
I know
that
we're
women,
closer.
Yes, than we aren't.
Yeah.
So but you think publishing the names of women who are...
If they want to. I've never said do it if women are, you know, if they're afraid, if
oh,
they,
okay.
you know, if they...
That's
if
good
they,
to clarify.
Yes.
Yeah, because
yeah.
women's
But I've worked
not
at
be...
newspapers. I worked at one paper. We covered a doctor, a physical doctor, who raped more than 100 women before he was caught. And when they did, those women banded together and said, we want our names, talk to
great.
Us, we are the face, we are not ashamed, we're angry. And the newspaper, the Cleveland Plain Dealer at the time, would not publish their names. And that was regarded as good ethical journalism. I did not then, I argued against it. And
but
I
it has
still
to be
that.
with the
course,
woman's consent.
Of course,
it
absolutely.
Absolutely has to be. Because I remember, and this is a little bit different, but when the baths got raided here in Albany, the gay baths
oh, yeah.
got raided here in Albany, the TU printed the names, and some of those men ended up committing suicide.
Horrible. Yeah.
Yes, it was really bad.
What year was that?
1980-81. Mm-hmm.
Jeannie says, Rosemary is wrong on rape again. Women are partly to blame for not coming forward, unquote. I think 400,000 untested rape kits is a testament to what happens when women do come forward. No means no if a woman is naked, if she is drunk, if she's in the middle of sex. What kind of person, quote, can't stop? What kind of person blames women when 1 out of 4 of us gets raped? Stop victim
Boy, not,
blaming.
Not that's exactly what I'm talking about. That is not behavior I want my granddaughter to indulge in and not to see the danger of.
Oh, and hi, panel, says Amelia. Long-time listener, first time writing in, Rosemary needs to speak with a sex educator ASAP.
We already read that one.
Right,
oh, we did.
Did.
Oh, so sorry.
Yes.
I really
okay.
am sorry. Lisa says, as usual, Rosemary is right. Sorry, Libby. If you had sons, you'd feel...
No, we did that one.
We did that one,
oh,
too.
Thank you.
That's right. There we go. All right. We're caught up?
Yeah, sort of.
I'm exhausted.
How much?
You all survived. You're fine.
Do we have
fine.
More time?
Yeah, we have 1 minute.
1 minute. Oh, good. We can get a lot done in a minute.
Mm-hmm. We can certainly get a, what?
We could try to get a lot.
I want to talk about Anonymous.
Yeah.
So the Justice Department is asking for identifying details on Anonymous op-ed author. The writer, a senior Trump administration official, plans to write a book. I assume it's already written. It's supposed to be published next week. The author is still unnamed in the Maggie Haberman article in the New York Times today. She writes that Assistant Attorney General Joseph Hunt asked the book's publisher and the author's book's agents for proof that the official never signed a nondisclosure agreement and that no access to classified and had no access to classified information. Absent that evidence, Mr. Hunt asked that they hand over information about where the person worked in the government and when.
So I love that the Justice Department, which saw nothing of value in the whistleblower's report just to even inform the FBI, found this so interesting that an assistant is working on it. There you go.
Yeah, and this is very different than the whistleblower case, too, because, you know, the argument about whether this author should be public is one argument, but the whistleblower is protected by federal statute.
Correct.
His identity is protected, his job, her job is protected, and trying to out that whistleblower, it violates that whole point. This is sort of like back when Joe Klein wrote the book,
The Primary Colors,
yeah, you know, back in the 90s. Yeah. Clinton, yeah, and his reelection back in 1996.
It's just one more example of the Justice Department working for the benefit of the White House rather than the benefit of the United States.
Selectively going after certain things.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. They're, I mean, they've weaponized the Justice Department.
Yes, yes. Okay, we covered that.
Okay, you all done? Excellent.
Yeah.
Then you're all free to go. Thank you very much. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Libby Post, thank you. We'll be back after this.
Good job.